We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Perpetual Chess. We have another great guest this week. She is very popular in the chess world. She is, especially in her native India, of course. She is an international master rated in the 2400s, has won many scholastic titles back as a top scholastic player. She is a Red Bull athlete, announcer, and a presenter, Tanya Sachdev. Tanya, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Ben. It's my pleasure to be here.
Tanya, how'd I do with your name? We were practicing before we recorded, so I hope I didn't do too badly.
You're a solid 7.
Okay, I'll take it. So, Tanya, thanks again for coming on. We're able to set this up via Twitter thanks to some fans requesting you and you actually responding. So I really appreciate that. And I imagine that you're fairly busy. We've got Gibraltar coming up where you've done some interviewing and some presenting, and you will be again. So what else is going on with you? Or is that sort of the top of your mind when it comes to your work right now?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how we got connected. And I think that's something so great about you know, social media platforms. And we had someone just write to us that we should do this, and here we are doing it. So I'm excited about this interview. But what else I'm starting the year with? Well, it is, as usual, Gibraltar, and I'll be back there as part of the broadcast team, bringing content and reporting to people who can't make it to Gibraltar. It's a tournament that I've played several times, and now I'll be working with them. This will be my 5th year with them working. So it's pretty much like home. And then right after that, I'm going to be playing in the National Team Championship, where I'll be representing Air India, followed by the Reykjavik Open. So I'm still playing actively quite a bit. And then I've got these other things that I love doing as well, which I kind of work around my playing schedule.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure it's a nice balance. And you mentioned two of my favorite tournaments, Reykjavik Open, which I have been to, and Gibraltar, which I haven't. But just as a chess fan, I've mentioned before on Perpetual Chess, I'm a big fan of the big open tournaments, and it doesn't get any bigger and stronger than Gibraltar. We've got MVL playing this year, Wesley So, Nakamura, Aronian. And of course, it's well known for its support of women's chess. It always has some of the strongest woman players in the world, and I'm sure it will again this year. So who else, do you know who else will be presenting with you?
So the commentary is going to be done by Ivanka and Simon. It'll just be me doing the online reporting, and we've got a TV crew from Spain who does all the video part of it, and of course the entire of Gibraltar Chess. I mean, everybody who's involved with the festival is just amazing to work with. I think as somebody who's still, you know, for me, playing is still my priority. For me, when I work in tournaments as part of their commentary team or the broadcast team, it's really important to work with people who I really enjoy working with. And Gibraltar is like that for me. And like you said, it's one of the strongest tournaments. It is the strongest open tournament. If you look at a true open, there are no rating cutoffs. We've always got very exciting players, the top elite players playing along with the top women players, along with super talented young players from across the world. It is very exciting to see. And we're going to have out of the top players, we've got MVL, Hikaru, we've got Levon, who were all there in the Grand Chess Tour final in London this time. Levon will be returning as the defending champion. And Hikaru is always so exciting to watch, and his style of play in open tournaments just makes him such a beast. You know, he's aggressive, he's quick, he puts on so much pressure. And I think what's amazing about these open events is that you don't have like the same players playing each other over and over again who totally know each other's style of play. You know, it's a completely different psychology. They're up against players they haven't heard of, but players who are extremely hungry for success, who are very hardworking, who are very young. Sometimes they're very, very talented. So every point is hard fought. And often in open tournaments, you do take extra risks because draws doesn't really well guarantee you a playoff or a tiebreak. So you've got to go for blood very often, and that's very exciting to watch. Besides the top players, you know, the first few rounds at all open tournaments is really exciting and always gives us great stories. We've got shocking results, we've got upsets going on, there are so many young talented players, it's going to be interesting to watch out for them. The other thing that Gibraltar is known for, and which is a very, very integral part of the festival, is women in chess, the women who play in Gibraltar. It's got the strongest representation in any open tournament. We've got, besides the absolute top players, you've got, for example, you've got Benjen and Lano, who've been, you know, on top form. They were the finalists of the World Championships. They've had a fantastic run in St. Petersburg. We've got Humpy coming back. We've got the Muzichuk sisters. That's going to be Sara Kadem, Valentina Gunina. That's going to be... So if you've got almost the entire medal-winning team of Georgia.
Wow.
Lot of strong women players playing, so that's going to be an interesting storyline in Gibraltar to watch out for. There's a huge prize fund for them, as Gibraltar likes to call it. It's positive discrimination for women there, and they really support and encourage women chess. Then we've also got a lot of young rising stars from across the world playing, who are very, you know, they're really hungry for success and always very exciting to watch. So of course, I'll also be keeping an eye out for all the Indians. There are quite a few of them, but at the top of my head, I think Adiban and Nihal are going to be very interesting to watch.
Wow, you are an amazing promoter of Gibraltar. That was so many points, so many points that I want to follow up on.
So the interview's done.
Oh yeah, we're done. Yeah, everyone, tune in, watch Gibraltar. We'll catch you next week. No, I'm just kidding. So one thing I just wanted to highlight, just for any listeners who are wondering, Tanya was referring to IM Jovanka Hauska and GM Simon Williams, who I think will be familiar to most listeners, but just in case you didn't catch it, and they're always entertaining when they're announcing, so that should be fun. And of course, you mentioned Hikaru's play, and he wins this event nearly every year. And one other point I wanted to highlight is, one of the reasons I like these tournaments is not just the fighting chess, but the openings are different, because when these 27, 2800 guys play play 24-2500s. They can't really trot out like the Berlin and the Petrov and the Queen's Gambit declined unless they're okay with a draw. So you see a lot more dynamic opening from the top player, and you see how they navigate the field when it's when draws are not always the ideal result for them. And the women in chess in Gibraltar, of course, I think it's amazing that that they do all this to support. And I recently had GM Alexander Kostyonik on, and we were discussing the Cairns Cup coming up in St. Louis in February, which is another awesome endeavor for women. But of course, I have to ask you about this long simmering, quote unquote, controversy in Gibraltar with the pairing issue for women. So for any listeners who don't know, there's just been this sort of weird coincidence, and I of course do think it's a coincidence, where a lot of women have played against each other in the past few years, including He Yifan, former women's world champion, and to the point where it seemed a little bit strange. But when pairing experts tried to replicate it, the pairings were shown to be legitimate. But I mean, what's your perspective of all the sort of hubbaloo? I don't even know how to say that word. All of the hubbaloo or whatever it is about that issue over the past few years.
Yeah, we're going to get back to this, Ben, but I just want to go to the point that you made about the openings that we see at open events like these. And I think that's such an important, that's such a valid point and such an important one, because like you mentioned, you know, you can't play 25 moves of theory that everybody knows and expect to get a playable or a middle game with chances with the game. But what we see in these events is top players really taking their chance and really going for aggressive lines, which, well, for practical or objective reasons, might not be the best continuation, but it's what gives them game to fight and to play. And this is what really, really makes it exciting, because anything can really happen. We get dynamic, enterprising middle game positions, which we don't get to see at the closed events at the very elite level. And this is one of the reasons why open events have become even exciting for the top players to be a part of, because it's sort of different from their year calendar. Just the kind of chess they play there is entertaining, and it's aggressive. It's very different from what we see normally. Coming back to what you mentioned about the pairing issue that happened 2 years ago at Gibraltar with He Yifan, I mean, it's honestly, it was such a non-issue. I don't know where to start with, but the entire pairing system, well, to was in fact replicated many times afterwards to sort of prove and to check and to prove if there was any, you know, anything manually done or anything different from how it should have been. In fact, FIDE themselves had conducted a very laborious study and checked the pairing round by round to ensure that there was absolute fair play. And every round that was paired by FIDE using all their systems, and it was almost like an autopsy. And everything that they did showed that the pairing would have been exactly the way it was gone. And in fact, we had a very similar case, and I mean, it's just one big coincidence that it happened to He Yifan again in the Isle of Man as well. Now, in Gibraltar, what happens is there are about 250 players playing, and often there are about between 50 to 60 women players. Now, that's a very, very high number of women players for any open event. And I think the year this happened, Yifan's rating was such that most players that she was paired against would fall in the bracket of about 2,400 till about 2,500. And that's the chunk of the women players that participate in Gibraltar, which is why it just so happened that every game she played, every round she was paired, it was just one big coincidence. But it's just how it turned out. But it was checked several times by different arbiters, and like I said, by FIDE themselves, it was absolutely fair pairing. So it was a big non-issue, and I think it probably could have been handled in a different way. I'm a big fan of He Yifan. I think she's one of the greatest female players in chess of all times. And but personally, if you ask me, showing up for the game and throwing a point like that the way it happened in protest for something that later on she herself got to know was there was absolutely nothing done to sort of manipulate the pairings in any way. I think that was very wrong. And as a chess player, I feel that I'm sure she has her reasons and her explanations, and she's a fantastic person, and she's extremely, extremely well respected. And with all due respect, I think that was something that should not have happened. You do not throw a point like that, because it was not just the question of protest. It was also how it affected the final standings for many, many other players. And it's just against game ethics, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with everything you said. And and the only reason I even brought it up, I saw the math, but I still see people talking about it on social media, or at least, last year I did during last year's event. So I just wanted to give you a chance to address it. But I mean, the idea that the organizers of this tournament would put all this this weight behind supporting women in chess and invite them and give them good conditions and good prizes in order to field such a strong field, and that they would then sort of put their finger on the scale, to me, it's just laughable. But listeners, please tune in to Gibraltar. And Tanya, I'd like to talk about your own chess playing, but first we're going to take a quick break. I'm excited to announce that this week's episode of Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by Chessable. If you're a regular listener to Perpetual Chess, you've probably heard me and our esteemed guests extol the virtues of Chessable even when they were not our sponsors. Chessable uses learning science to help you improve your chess as efficiently as possible. It's a great way to remember more ideas faster, even for a middle-aged dad like me. What's more, they're an open platform where anyone can publish their courses. I'm talking to you, chess teachers and coaches. And they paid out hundreds of thousands of dollars in commissions to their partner authors. They have big plans for 2019, so if you're a student, author, or coach, be sure to check out chessable.com. Okay, so listeners, Gibraltar starts January 21st, so be sure to check it out and watch the broadcast as it is shown. But Tanya, you mentioned that your biggest priority is still playing chess, and you've got a few events coming up. So when you're at home in between events, how do you balance something like going to Gibraltar and, I'm sure you'll be interviewing some top players, versus all of the preparation that's necessary to play in like the India team event and the Reykjavik Open and strong events like that?
To be honest, it's not really a balance. Or at least if it is, it's really tipped on the side of playing. Most of my time is spent playing and training. There are certain events I do really enjoy doing commentary, as well as being on the other side of this mic, which is to interview people and to sort of get their stories out there. And I find that really interesting as well. I think it's very different, the kind of preparation that's required for both these things. I mean, when I'm preparing for an event, for a tournament, I also try not to sort of do a commentary gig or a broadcast gig and then go right into a tournament the very next day. I've tried that before and that never works well. I think you have to have the right mindset for both. So I try and give it a bit of a gap so that I'm able to train and sort of get back into the playing mode as well. And when you have to play, I mean, the preparation is very different. It really depends from event to event, but mostly for an open tournament or a team event, of course, what's important is to improve your general level of play, to get your mind working in a good shape. So you're sort of trying to solve positions. You're trying to analyze your previous tournament and see where you've gone wrong. If there are any big holes in your opening, you're trying to fix those. Sort of just going through your own openings and revising them, because we don't have that much time before a game. So you kind of want to really streamline the amount of work you end up doing during the tournament. And working on tactics, trying to play a few blitz, just the idea is to get into shape. Of course, there are certain other tournaments that require a different approach, like a team event. You sort of work and train differently for those. When it comes to broadcast and commentary, the preparation for that is totally different as well. I mean, there you're just trying to get more, a more wholesome knowledge about what's going on, who are the players, you want to what are their stories that you want to bring out, and how you want to do that. I think it's sort of more challenging when you're trying to cover and bring out stories from an open tournament, because you never know who you will be talking to after a game, and it's really hard to sort of focus on all games, and the challenge is to ask game-appropriate questions, especially in the post-game interviews in an open event, because you can't be following all of them. But it's interesting and exciting as well. And I think one of the things I really enjoy about working in these events are the long interviews that we do. And we've done a couple of them in Gibraltar, which have been my all-time favorite is the one that I did with Boris Gelfand. I mean, that's just, I think that's probably, if I may say so myself, I think that I did really well in that. I mean, he's obviously brilliant and everything, but I really enjoyed asking. Maybe it was just a conversation we had, and I think it was just, it went really well, and I think that's what I really enjoy, are these long interviews. As somebody who's doing on-site reporting and someone who's trying to create content, it's also the idea is to create something that people can enjoy from everywhere and from all over the world, and different levels of chess players can enjoy and understand that content and be more excited to follow the sport. So I like doing that. It's different from playing completely, and I think it's a good idea if you can sort of, if you do a commentary gig or a broadcast gig, to give yourself some time to come back to the idea of playing again a serious tournament.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned that you feel like the most important thing for events like you have coming up is just general form rather than anything specific. But what? How do you feel generally about your form? How have your recent results been? Is there anything in particular that you're working on with your chess game?
2018 was overall, I would say, I don't think it was a brilliant year in terms of performance, but I did have some really good games and some results that I was proud of, but there were a lot of tournaments and a lot of games that I definitely think I could have done a lot better and I learned a lot from. I won the Commonwealth. I made it to the national team. I had a really nice run at the Olympiad as well. But again, talking about the Olympiad, I also finished fourth on my board and I missed the medal. The Indian team finished eighth. So it was, I have to say, finishing eighth as for the Indian women team, it's not a disastrous result. But definitely, it was disappointing. We were hoping for a medal. All of us had worked extremely hard. I think with my own personal play, learned a lot. And I think if you ask me what was the one thing that I take back from 2018 to work on in 2019, it would be a lot to do with my opening preparation. And of course, as usual, to go back to Mark Dvoretsky's endgame manual for like the 500th time.
Oh boy.
And study those rook endings.
Okay, yeah, the Bible for stronger players such as yourself.
And it's funny, it's the Bible for any professional player for endgames, but what I find really interesting is that you have to just see it over and over again. It's not a book that you finish reading and you just take everything from it. It's you keep going back to it time and time again.
Yeah, and for listeners who may be wondering, I mean, you may have heard other guests recommend this book, but I would say if you're around the 2200 level is maybe where it starts to be of some use, but below that, do you agree that there are better endgame books for lower rated players? Tanya?
Sorry, could you repeat that, Ben?
Do you agree that there would be better choices? If you're below, say, the 2200 level, do you
right.
think that there are better endgame books than the Dvoretsky book? I think it might be a bit over some players'
heads.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are plenty of really good endgame books. This is just the one that that I've been reading now for several years. And like I mentioned, I keep going back to. But, I mean, if you're asking me to recommend one, then I honestly have no idea what to say to that, but I'm sure there are a lot of other books as well.
Yeah, I'm sure we have many recommendations on the webpage of books that have been recommended by previous guests. And you mentioned when we were corresponding on Twitter, you mentioned that you just finished a chess book that you enjoyed. What else have you been reading and studying?
So I think I used to read chess books a lot more when I was playing in the junior categories, which was many, many years ago. I think that's when computers were not used as extensively for training. And but recently I finished reading Positional Play from Jakub Agard's Grandmaster Preparation series, as well as his book Calculations, and I enjoyed both of them tremendously, especially the one Positional Play. And in fact, this was recommended to me by Jakub himself. The other book that I finished reading was Thinking Inside the Box again by Jakob. And I think it's such a great, I really enjoyed reading it because that's like, it's almost like even it can be read like a bedtime storybook. You do need the board and pieces from time to time because there are positions and analysis. But just the things that are spoken about, there's a lot of psychological stuff going on in the book, which is not just, it's not just cliches and talks, it's just actual practical advice. And I think it was really interesting to read that book as well. So yeah, so the two books that I really enjoyed reading recently was A Positional Play and Thinking Inside the Box. And my next book is Positional Decision Making by Boris Kalfin.
Sounds like you'll be pretty busy. And you mentioned Jakob Augaard, and if memory serves, you did like a training camp, maybe even more than one with him. Is that correct?
Yeah, so he was in fact even the coach of our national Indian women team for the Olympiad. So as part of the team, we worked with him. We had three training camps with him before the Batumi Olympiad. I've also been to him in Scotland twice. So I've worked with him more than a couple of times.
And for listeners who either are not strong enough or don't have the means, like who would never experience a training camp like that with other stronger players and an elite chess player. Could you describe the experience like in as much detail as possible? How much chess are you doing a day? What's the nature of the exercises, stuff like that?
Okay. So the first time that I did a camp with Jakob was about 2 years ago, maybe a little less than that. And I'd never met him before. I'd only ever heard of him because of all the great books that, you know, he's written, and it's Quality Chess, and it's that's his publication house. And right. So I knew him as an author. And then I remember I was playing a tournament in Delhi when my local trainer, Vishal Sareen, he told me that there's this camp that's going to be held in Glasgow. And he knew Jakob, he'd been in touch with him. And he's like, there are about 7 to 8 players there. And do you want to go do it? And it's a 7-day camp. And he was there. And I was kind of excited because everyone that he named who was attending the camp was already a grandmaster. So I was like, yeah, I want to do it. It sounds really exciting. And I obviously had no idea what I was getting myself into. So I go to Glasgow and it was my first time there, working with all these really strong players. I was also the only girl in that camp, but that was the least of the problems. It was just the first couple of days, like the chess literally, I mean, after being, you know, an international master, I've got 2 grandmaster norms and at least, you know, a reasonable 2400 around player. Like it was just, the chess was just completely going over my head. Like I couldn't solve a single position. We were working for about 6 to 7 hours every day. We would work for 3 hours in the morning. Then we would have this, there's this thing that we do there, which is, you know, you have like salad and like shakes for lunch or whatever, like very minimal, not like Indian food lunch and all of it. Anyway, so we would have that. And then we would go to the gym, work out for a bit, come back, train again for another 3 to 4 hours, and basically like die. So sure. It was, and the positions and all the training that was happening was so, so difficult. And everybody else was about at least 100 points higher rated than me. I remember my first training camp, Sam was there as well, Sam Shanklin. And, you know, when we would be analyzing and we would be solving stuff. So obviously on different boards and stuff. And then when we would be discussing, like his analysis would be so fast and so difficult to follow that I remember going back to bed one night, like almost in tears, like wondering, like, why the hell am I here? Like, what am I even good enough to play chess? It was just so, so hard. And I remember going to Jakob and talking to him and telling him that, you know, this is just really, really difficult for me. And I really don't, you know, I can't really follow a lot of stuff and I can't really like understand. And I think this camp is for higher level than mine. And it was funny. He just like, you know, he just looked at me and I don't know, Ben, you might want to edit this out later.
But no, this is gold. This is, people experience this all the time. I mean,
what I'm about to say, you might want to edit out.
We'll see.
He basically just like, he was like, the only advice I have for you, Tanya, is grow a pear. And I was like, oh. So
Is that still politically correct in 2019?
Yeah, this interview just got R-rated. So it was, you know, at that moment, it wasn't funny at all. But I, like, later on, I understood and I really respected the fact that he didn't make things easier for me. You know, he obviously, he wasn't, and for, you know, you can't really say anything today online which doesn't offend someone or the other. Right. So this, I just want to clarify, this was not a sexist statement at all. What he was trying to say and what he wanted to tell me was that if I want to be a better player, I have to be a stronger person.
Right.
And I can't, you know, be... unless you challenge yourself and unless you sort of push yourself out of your comfort zone and do things that are difficult, you're not going to improve. And, you know, that's the lesson that I took back. And I remember the last 2 days of the camp was so much better. I was feeling so much better and I was solving a lot more. And I came back feeling so motivated and inspired to just sort of, you know, be stronger and to not because it's so easy for us to feel that, to feel weak at times. And it just seems like an easier option. But, and I had some really good results right after that camp as well. The next year, he was also part of the Indian. He was the coach, the national coach for the Indian women team, and it was just incredible to work with him. And I realized why he is known and respected as one of the just the best trainer in the world.
Okay. Wow, that's an amazing story, by the way, Tanya. There's no way I'm cutting that out unless you beg me to. but that's exactly the kind of thing that listeners like to hear, because we can all relate to it, no matter your level. It's very actionable advice in terms of, like, basically, if you're not suffering, you're not getting better.
You're not improving.
Yeah. So I just to tie a bow on the sort of chess improvement theme. Challenge yourself, you would say. You've given some great book recommendations. You mentioned that a lot of your work is with computers on openings. But I don't know if you do any coaching of lower-rated players, but do you have any other general advice that you would give to people who are still working hard to get better?
I think the other big thing that I learned with working with Jakob, especially in our national training camps and the two sessions that I had with him in Scotland, the group training sessions, was that, you know, this was a big take back for me, that actually as chess players, when we're playing a tournament and when we're playing a game, our only responsibility is to think about what is our next move. That's the only decision that we need to occupy ourselves with and to think about, not about what's going on around, not about what the result will be, not what happens if you win and not what happens if you lose. The decision making of what you're going to play next is the only question that you need to ask yourself and to answer at every point in the game. And this is something that he's spoken about in his books as well, are the three questions that you can ask yourself that really help you in the process of decision making. And this is, you know, what is the worst place piece, what is your opponent's threat, and what is your opponent's weakness? And these are the three questions that you ask yourself at any given point during the game. The other very important lesson that I learned from Jakob is that chess is really not an emotional game at all. What I'm trying to say with that is that chess doesn't care about you. Chess doesn't care about how you are and how you're feeling. And the fact is that you are not going to win a game just because you think you're a nice person or you deserve to win something. It's not going to happen like that. You actually have to make good moves on the board.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Surprise.
Harkens back to that Fischer quote about he doesn't believe in chess psychology. He believes in good moves.
Yes.
And the three questions, one more follow-up on that. So once you realized just how important it is to ask yourself those three questions, did you find it a challenge to sort of actually remember to think about it during the game? Because I think that's something that a lot of people might struggle with, is like, okay, I know I'm supposed to be thinking about this, but then once the sort of proverbial lights are on and the battle is raging, you just sort of fall into your old thought patterns, and it can be hard to make changes in terms of rewiring your brain.
No, you're absolutely right, Ben, you know, and, you know, what comes to my mind are the books that I read when I was younger, and so many things that are written in books or taught to us become really difficult to follow through when you're actually playing the game. Of course, it's very different when you're actually playing in the tournament with everything going on. It's not the same as a training situation at all. But I think if you can just consciously have this in your mind that you need to do this, even if you do it at maybe in the beginning, you'll do it only a couple of times and maybe you might not do it. But I think if you can, the more you do it, the more results you see coming, it just becomes second nature. It's all about just practicing to do it over and over again so that it happens more often in your game. And the thing is that I realized that it actually works. Just asking these three questions helped me in many, many different positions in many different tournaments. And I think it's true for every level.
Okay, excellent advice. All right, so Tanya, we've only got a bit more time, and I want to cover a couple more topics, one of which is, as we mentioned in the introduction, you are sponsored by Red Bull, at least here in the United States. Obviously, Hikaru Nakamura also has had a relationship with Red Bull, but it's fairly rare for a top chess player to have a corporate sponsorship. So do you mind telling us how this relationship came about?
Right, so it was back in 2012. I got a call from Red Bull India, and they wanted to have a meeting with me, and I was as surprised as everything that you just said, and you just associate Red Bull with insane stuff like space jumps and extreme physical endurance things
and vodka.
So, you know, being a chess player, I was a bit surprised to get that call. And then I met them, and the meeting was a lot of fun, and we spoke about many ideas, and they wanted to get into the whole mind space sports scenario. In fact, now they're also doing Red Bull Mind Gamers, which is developing and creating a lot of games and puzzles that sort of pushes your mind and your brain out of its comfort zone, so you have to actually think and solve stuff. So I think it all started with sort of making chess part of their portfolio and their profile. And I think we just really connected really well and got along really well. And nothing really happened for a few months, but then I think when they decided that they wanted to get into chess, they took me on, and it was a no-brainer for me. I mean, Red Bull is such a fantastic company to be associated with, and I think the biggest reason for me for that is that it's not a typical sponsorship, you know. It's not about wearing a logo and showing up at an event. As a Red Bull athlete, you sort of interact with the team at Red Bull to come up and to sort of mastermind ideas to promote the sport in your country. You do cool stuff and cool events with them, things that challenge you as well as bring the game to different parts of to different people. And that's what we've done with Red Bull. And there's this program that I really enjoy and that I'm really proud of, is the corporate chess program that we've done. You know, India is big on chess, and we found out after the first, second corporate event that there was this huge correlation between people who are in these big IT corporates doing really, really well. And a lot of them have actually played chess to a certain degree in their school and college. A lot of them have played tournaments before, but they had to give it up for their corporate career. But they love the sport. They follow it and they play it. And India especially is a very strong chess country. So a lot of people are very good chess players here. So it was really challenging for me as well, especially because they made the simuls, clock simuls. I'd never done those before. We really enjoyed them. And I think this coming year, we're looking at taking that up a notch and doing more exciting stuff with corporates. We've also taken chess to the Taj Mahal, which was another very exciting event we did. We held tweet chess, where the most tweeted move got played against me. So the idea is to just sort of do really fun stuff, and it's a pretty cool association because it sort of pushes me to think of something with my sport that I really enjoy and that I've made a career out of, and do interesting things with it. And now they've got so I was their first chess athlete that they signed on, and they of course they've got Hikaru now, and they've also got Sansai Abdumalik. So they're really getting into the mind sporting area, and of course chess, I don't even think it's an argument. I think chess is the ultimate mind game.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's a sponsorship that makes sense. And what you describe in terms of the what your responsibilities are, it does sound more fun than just showing up at, like, you know.
It's a lot of fun.
Some event. And we've had a few other guests from India on the show, Vidit Gujarati and Sagar Shah, the dean of Indian chess, told us a little bit about how sponsorships can work in the Indian world in terms of being employed by a company, but also having support to do to pursue chess professionally for top players like yourself. So for women in India, is there a similar arrangement? I mean, whether it's about your personal situation or other strong players, strong woman players from India, is there the same level of support?
I really think, Ben, that in India, things are really changing for women in chess, just like they are everywhere in the world. And the federation, the current federation that we have, has taken a lot of steps and a lot of different initiatives to promote women chess with the kind of support that they gave to the women team this time playing in the Olympiad and for our other team championship. And also at the grassroots level, they've started this Smart Girl program, which basically encourages a lot of, there's a certain amount of funds that have been dedicated to having women tournaments and prize funds for girls. And these are things, you know, one can argue that should there be women titles and should there be women prizes in open events and stuff like that. But the fact is that these are things that actually promote and encourage girls to take up the sport professionally, and also encourage their support system, which is families and parents around them, you know, who play an integral role in the developing years, to know that chess is a viable career option. It's actually very, very difficult in India to be part of the national team just simply because of the amount of strong players that there are there. But once you do make it to the team, the support does come in, like you were saying, that Vidit and Adiban were mentioning, that we've got, you know, the public sector, the government companies like airlines and the oil sector, they employ the top level athletes in every sport, which is why I said that I'll be playing for Air India in the national team championship. So I'm actually employed by them, but the employment is a very special employment where you have the benefits and you are sort of on the same payroll and the same benefit scale as other employees of that level in your job, but you're given the time to pursue your career professionally. But it's only as long as you're playing for the Indian team or are performing at a very good level. So, you know, from that being a good player to making it to that level is where the support is required, and a lot is being done to make sure that happens, and things are looking good.
Glad to hear it. And of course, with India being such a populous nation, you know, over a billion people, it's got to be extremely competitive, as you mentioned, to reach that level. So, but I'm glad to hear, and obviously with the young talent you mentioned, along with Sarin just crushing everyone in
the Blitz, yes.
Yeah, and Rapid and Blitz, you know, this could be early days, so it'll be interesting to see how things develop over the coming years. So just one last question for you, Tanya, if you don't mind. So what's your day-to-day life like? Like, where in India do you live, and what other interests do you have outside of chess?
So I live in Delhi, born and brought up in Delhi. And so it's home here. I don't get that much time here because I do travel a lot and I'm playing a lot and I'm out a lot. But as far as what other interests I have, besides playing, I do really enjoy the work around chess as well. You know, the things I do with Red Bull, the events that we come up and that we take chess to different parts of the country. I really do enjoy doing commentary once in a while and all the presentation at chess tournaments. The reporting part of it. I think besides chess, it's, you know, the usual stuff. I enjoy movies, Bollywood. If you're Indian, you've got to love Bollywood. And I'm a bit of a foodie, so I love going out for food. I do have an interest in fashion as well. I just don't have that much time, but I often think that I'm the sort of person who has so many different goals. But I think chess is such an addiction. You know, I've noticed that when I'm in Delhi, for a bit too long, I really do miss playing, and I kind of want to get back on the road and get back to tournaments. So it's chess is such a drug like that. So it's kind of hard to find time for other things. The other thing that I'm really passionate about is, doing something for, so we have a lot of stray dogs and a lot of stray animals in India. And that's something that I want to get involved with later on in my life, where I want to, sort of take care of them, but that's for later. So a lot of dreams and a lot of goals, and hopefully I'll do all of them.
Yeah. Well, you're off to a good start in your life, I would say. So Tanya, I thank you for joining us, and, I wish you good luck in your upcoming, good luck behind the mic.
Thank
in Gibraltar
you.
And then over the board. If people were interested in contacting you, is Twitter the best way to do so, or is there another way for people to keep up with what you're up to?
So I am on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, but I think I really enjoy talking and corresponding and sort of staying in touch with people who love the game and who follow what I do and who are following everything that's happening in the chess world on Twitter. Yeah, so you can reach out to me on any of these social media platforms, and it's fun to do that.
Okay, excellent. Well, Tanya, I really appreciate your time, and we'll be watching and enjoying the show in Gibraltar.
Yeah, I look forward to bringing all of you the action from Gibraltar. It's such a brilliant tournament, lots of exciting chess, and I can't wait to be there.
Okay, take care, Tanya. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my esteemed producer, Matthew Passy, Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music, and Chessable.com for their generous financial support. I also want to thank everyone who helps support the show in little ways. That can be telling a friend about the show, writing something positive about it on social media, or writing a glowing review on Apple Podcasts or another podcast platform. Apparently that stuff really matters. I also want to give special thanks to my PayPal and Patreon perpetual partners. As you guys know, I put a lot of time into this show, a lot of research, promotion, actual booking of interviews, doing the interviews. I love the work, but it wouldn't be possible without the generous financial support of the following people: Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Vrancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Ali Morchetti, Brian Mullis. I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Bill Moran, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Balcom, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Chabrie, Christopher Wood. I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel Schaefer, Daniel Viney, David Cramley, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith. I am Alec Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt. I am Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Agard of Quality Chess Publishing, James Bonastia, Jason Woolum, Jeff Anderson, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Hartman, John Jernigan, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Kabbala Krishnan, Laura Belyovsky, Leo Delgado, Lorraine Dore, Lucia Silva, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Martin Habish, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, my main man Moonmaster 9000, Nate Solin, Nathan Webster, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek of DiplomatChess.com, Robert Steiner, Ryan Berg, Ryan Sohn, Steiner Lima, Stuart Katz, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Thomas Stonix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrancourge, FM Zhao Chang of Chess1000.com, and Jivko Stoyanov. Thanks, as always, everyone. I will catch you guys soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.